on May 23rd.
I want to go back to normal.
What's normal?
The Paramount Plus original series, Evil, returns.
We've already hunted werewolves and demons.
And now what? A baby antichrist?
Okie dokie.
Prepare yourself.
You will not beat us.
For the end.
I have visions of hell.
Make it stop. Make it shut up.
You're not gonna survive this.
Evil, the final season. Streaming May 23rd, only on Paramount Plus.
Welcome back to another edition of Through the Smoke, a Miami Hurricanes football and recruiting podcast here on the 24/7 Sports Network. David Lake, joined as always by Gabby Urrutia, and we have a special guest on, former host. I was the co-host then, back then, right, Andrew? Andrew Ivins is joining us. We're going to talk a little bit of recruiting, then we're going to talk about Miami's coaching situation, where things might have gone wrong with Manny Diaz, and what would be the best fit for Miami if a move is made at the coaching spot. First off, let's welcome in Andrew. How you doing?
I am doing good. You're not only the host, you're the engineer as well.
You were producer.
Yeah. I like engineer better because you're in charge of like the levels on the microphone and stuff. So
there you go.
You know, mine had some dust on it. Had to dust it off. I haven't done a podcast in a while, so hopefully I'm not a little, you know, hopefully I'm up to par. You know, it's been a while, but I'm ready. Let's get this thing going.
We'll knock the rust off here. We'll start with recruiting. Got two South Florida area recruiting experts on. Miami is Central Connecticut State this week, so no reason to go into that game. Basically, it's going to be a glorified scrimmage. You'll see plenty of young players play, and, you know, we won't really know what to make of any of it, but Miami should win comfortably, right? So, recruiting, what should Miami do from here? I'm just going to leave this pretty open-ended, right? Because I think we made it clear coming into the season, this coaching staff was banking on selling a successful 2021 season, closing strong, chopping wood with these big time local recruits, you know, convincing them that Miami can coach you up and you can win at Miami. It's not looking good right now. They got time to turn things around. We'll see. But in your opinion, should anything change from here, or should Miami start scrambling for plan B's, plan C's, and all that stuff we have seen for the past decade plus when Miami gets to this point in the season?
Well, I think it would be naive and the wrong move for Miami to just maintain the course, right? Stay on the same heading that you've been on throughout this whole cycle. And Miami, to an outsider, is just slowly kind of trudging along when it comes to recruiting. It seems like there's been no urgency at any point, maybe aside from that first few weeks in June when they brought in, what was it, over 30 official visitors. But after outside of that, it feels like they're only recruiting a handful of guys. And maybe that's by design with the transfer portal. You don't know how many spots you're going to have. And I get all that. But I think we're getting to the point where it's like, okay, you guys keep going after these blue chip prospects, and now you're 1-2. And yeah, you'll be 2-2 after this weekend. Hopefully, they take care of business in Central. But then, I mean, your goals are still ahead of you. Don't get me wrong. Like the ACC, it does not look strong in any way.
Sure.
You know, Florida State's down. Some of these other teams are down. I mean, Miami could still get to 10 wins. I think that would be a little of a stretch to project that. But I think you've got to start going and expanding the board. And not banking on, hey, we are going to get a Shamar Stewart or Nigel E. Kelly, and start moving to some other guys. I think it would be, to me, if I'm working in that recruiting department, you know, these past two games, I would have had as many local guys that I think could potentially play at Miami in the stands. And I don't know if Miami did that. So we'll see. But my biggest thing would be expand the board, not saying you take plan B's now, but you got to position yourself to get those guys, because we're less than 7 weeks until that early signing period.
Let me ask you this, Andrew, too. So what do you think of the leaning on the transfer portal potential? Like, is that acceptable to do after your third season, right? I think it makes sense in year one and year two, but we're now in year three. This will be, what, the fourth offseason, I guess, technically, of the Manny Diaz era. Would that be acceptable to you? Like, is that something you should turn to rather than, quote unquote, reaching for high school players?
Well, I think in the era we are in 2021 college football, I think the transfer portal is always going to be here. It's not going anywhere. We're only going to see more of it. But maybe this is more of a big picture program. I think you cannot continue to rely on these guys as crutches.
Sure.
You know, they could be plug and play, you know, give you something you need when you don't have it, but just, hey, we're not getting this high school kid, so we're going to go straight to the transfer portal. I don't think that's a sustainable path,
right,
if you're Miami. So I, to me, like, no, I don't think that's the right answer. I think I've
said
this.
It's a Band-Aid, right?
Yeah, it's a Band-Aid. And you're not putting a Band-Aid on in year four.
Right.
And I've said this before. I think kind of the model is you take, you know, let's say you have 22 counters. You try to take maybe 18, 17, 18 high school kids, guys you want, guys that you think, hey, I can develop. And we'll get into the player development later.
Yeah.
And then you supplement that with some transfers. If a Tyreek Stevenson wants to come home, obviously you're trying to hit with a Jalen Phillips, a Quincy Roche, you know, guys that are going to get drafted. But also, man, you know, for every one of those guys Miami gets drafted, there have been some duds in the portal. I mean, what was DeAndre Johnson, the best available edge guy they could have got this year? I think he's kind of been a disappointment, right?
Yep.
You know, Charleston Rambo had the good game against Michigan State, and maybe there's some more issues on offense, but he's not a for sure thing. Like, are we going to sit here and say, hey, he's going to get drafted or anything like that?
I think, too, you could question, why not linebacker, right?
Right.
So, right. And to me, that comes down to, did you reach for some high school guys that maybe you shouldn't have taken?
Right.
And, you know, and it was a hole last year. It appears to still be a hole, right? So, yeah. Let's turn to, you know, I don't know if we want to label them Plan Bs, but who are some guys, and I'll throw this to you, Gabby. You get first shot here. Who are some guys you've seen either locally or guys you know of within the state that you're like, okay, maybe Miami needs to start giving this guy a stronger look now that we are at this point in recruiting?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it depends on the position that you're looking for, but I mean, you look at the tight end recruiting right now and it's Jahlil Skinner and then who, you know, it's like not one really there. I mean, maybe you could look at a DeCarlo Donaldson type. I mean, Rhett Lashley and Rob Likens are going to be at Gulliver on Friday to see Jaylen Brown. You know, who knows if that's an opportunity for them to get eyes on him too. I know, me and Andrew have talked about defensive linemen before. You got R. Mason Thomas over at Cardinal Gibbons in Fort Lauderdale. I mean, he's an Iowa State commit, a guy that Matt Campbell, I mean, I feel like you talk about player development. I mean, I feel like Matt Campbell is one of the guys that have done the most with the least probably. And that's a guy that he likes, I mean, why not roll the dice there? I mean, there's a couple other guys you can look at. I mean, on the offensive line, you got one commit. You got, Javon Nonar at Belgrade, that, like, you know, 6'7", 285. Like, there's not a ton of those dudes walking around. Like, you know, why not maybe, you know, kick the tires there? It seems like there is options. There's people down here that can play, you know, and is Miami willing to go there? I mean, again, like what Andrew said, why don't you at least just have those guys, invite them over to Hard Rock Stadium and bring them over, you know, size them up. You probably haven't seen those guys. Extend those invitations. It costs you nothing to go, you know, bring these guys onto campus or bring those guys to the games and, you know, just have them hang around in case that you potentially decide to go that route. I mean, the fact that they're not doing that is, you know, questionable to me, I guess, at this point.
Andrew, you have any names?
Well, the big one for me is Mason Thomas or R. Mason Thomas. I mean, I've never seen someone go by with one letter before. Like, it's just weird. I'm not knocking the kid or anything. To me, he's a guy I've always been high on. I remember seeing him at a 7-on-7 circuit playing linebacker. He's a bit of a tweener. He's at Cardinal Gibbons. It's got a super fast L drill time, which if you're in the scouting, that normally correlates and translates well to the next level. And I pop on his senior stuff, and it's pretty impressive. Like, I don't, to me, when I watch him, I don't, like, I think he's further along than DeAndre Johnson was, you know, a couple of years ago when he went to Tennessee. So I think he's a guy that the SEC will circle. And we'll see if Iowa State's going to hold on to him. And David, I was texting you about this. You know, why do I think Miami needs to start expanding the board now? And it's because the closer we get to the early signing period, you know, the harder it is for a kid to just kind of walk away. And we've been down this road before. We mean we've covered it. We've seen Miami try to think that they're just going to show up and flip an in-state kid from a Minnesota or an Iowa State. And those kids say, you know what, you know, I've been talking to Matt Campbell, I've been talking to PJ Fleck, these guys have been leaving me in day one. Hey, you guys are, you know, 7-6, 8-5.
Yeah, like, you're no better, quite frankly.
Exactly. I'm going to go up there. So he's one. You know, Isaiah Hastings, he's a defensive lineman. I know he's been on campus. Gabby's written about him, the Canadian kid at Clearwater International Academy. Like, Miami, in my opinion, needs to be full bore. Like, this is our guy. I think you could say the same about Zane Durant, the defensive lineman out of Orlando, Lake Nona. I mean, I tweeted out a video a few weeks ago where that kid is on punt coverage and outrunning some skill players. Yeah. So I think I've always said, I think he's kind of like a scheme fit. So those would be the two. If you want to get a little weird and like talk some linebackers, you know, I think there's some good kind of intriguing guys, different guys around the state. Let's start with Vanderbilt commit Bryce Cohen. He's up at Tallahassee Godbee. He's like a 6'3.5", 200-pound guy. You know, I'm not saying Miami's going to have a chance to flip him from Vanderbilt, but I think Miami, I mean, I don't know what's going on at linebacker. Like, they have some athletic guys, you know. Again, we keep talking development on this podcast, but it's like, where's Tyreek Austin Cave? Like, you know, he's not even getting snaps. Like, I think that's a major red flag. So he's one, another one. Hold on, I'm going through my notes. I know, bad. Alex Williams, another kid from the Panhandle, like he's an all-state state weightlifting champ, also plays quarterback. Like, I just think there's some hidden, not hidden gems, but like some guys that maybe Miami should be entertaining and getting on campus now.
Sooner, right. Not in November and December.
Exactly. And you know, recruiting is a 24/7 thing, man. You got to do it 365. And it seems like right now, Miami's more focused on the season. And actually, I'll toss out two more guys for you. Defensive linemen that are committed to Tennessee, both from the Central Florida area. Vincent Sneed, he's at Winter Park. I know he visited back in June. I think that kid can play an offensive tackle, but he's committed to be a defensive end for Tennessee. And then Jordan Phillips, who's out of Cowie, he also visited. Miami worked him out. They loved him. Like, both those guys, you know, Tennessee, I guess they're starting Joe Milton at Florida this weekend. Like, I think they could get off to a bumpy start as well. So those are just some guys off the top of my head. You know, I have a gut feeling that Miami's probably going to look more out of state. We've seen them kind of toss some offers out, which you know, I don't know, we can get into that again later. those are the names off the top of my head. And I'll add this, you know, Gabby said, brought up a good one, DeCarlo Donaldson, the tight end H-back at Gulliver Prep. Yeah, man, he's a fun kind of good high school football player. How much upside is there? I don't know, but I do think he can make plays out of Miami. You know, he's productive. But I have heard, and you know, I'm not trying to break news here or anything, but you know, if Miami misses on Jaleel Skinner, I would not be surprised if they just go straight transfer portal route at tight end, which again, we can get into.
That's what they want to do, I think, in general, just tight end, but you know,
the offensive line, it's the same thing. Like, if they don't get Armella and Julian Armella at St. Thomas Aquinas or Malik Ogbo out of the Washington State area, I think it's very likely that they just call it a day and just go straight portal. Like, I'm not sure if there's anyone out there that they're willing to reach for, a Nonar, any of these guys that, you know, you could throw out there. Like, I'm not 100% certain that they're just going to go after one of these types of guys, I think they would probably go straight portal as well.
Yeah, and to follow that up, Jakavian Nonar is the kid you're mentioning out of Glade Central. He actually hasn't played this season. I don't know. There's some weird, like transfer reason. Palm Beach County. But I do agree. He's intriguing to me. It sounds like he might end up at Florida. I think if you're Miami, and this at one time was kind of the plan before there was a coaching change, like they were all about taking a developmental tackle or two, stashing them on the roster so then you would have a guy. And it seems like they're just getting away from that now, which...
Well, Carswell, I would say, fits that,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, you're right. You're right. Okay.
But I'm all for stacking those, like you're saying. Yeah. Don't just take one. Take a bunch. You because know, it's a numbers game.
Right. And you know, Zion Nelson, maybe he's not the... You know, everyone's stocked down on him right now, but he was one of those guys. I mean, I remember I got all this crap when I wrote he's got to wear size 16 shoes and all this stuff. And, you know, he will probably dress on Sundays. We'll leave it at that right now. And I don't know. So going back to where we started with this, like, all right, if you're going to take 22 guys, maybe you take 18 high schoolers, that leaves you room for what, 6 transfer portal guys. You know, ideally those 18 high schoolers, yeah, man, like 15 of them should be really good. And then you can take a couple projects, but take the right projects.
Right.
You know, don't take a short linebacker, an unathletic linebacker, like take a 6'7" offensive tackle or something like that.
So, okay. Before we turn the page on recruiting, we'll end it here. We haven't talked to you in a while, Andrew, and just your thoughts on Miami's commit class right now, just the guys they have committed, right? It's 9 guys. I think it's, you know, the guys they have committed overall, I don't have an issue with. I mean, you can nitpick a couple of them, but, you know, they've addressed corner and DB in general, I think, pretty well. I am a Jakari Brown believer. And again, I like Flip Carswell, too, as a developmental tackle. The guys they have, just how important will it be for Miami to hold on to these guys as well?
Well, I mean, given what we've seen out of the defense, like, damn, they need some defensive backs. And that is, look, the strength of the class. I was actually talking with Markeith Williams, one of his coaches, the other day. While there's not much footage available online, like, he's having a really, really good senior season. I think he returned a kickoff for a touchdown. Traquan Fagans, I love him. You know, when I dug into his film, it was like, how is Alabama kind of letting this guy get out of state? And then he's only impressed my colleagues in terms of the analysts agree. You know, Kamari Rogers, unfortunately, from what I've heard, has torn his ACL. Yeah. So he is out. And you know, modern medicine, he should be good to go. That's unfortunate. Have I been on since I saw Jakari at the beginning of the season? Have I been on since?
I don't think so.
Yeah, so I was up in Atlanta for the Corky Kell Classic, which is, I think they played 5 games in one day at Mercedes-Benz. And Jakari, it was Lowndes versus Walton. And Walton and out of Marietta, I mean, they probably had 10 Division I guys, and Lowndes had none. And I was super just impressed with everything about him. You know, he's still not... Sure. He's not going to wow you throwing on air. I mean, this is the kid. I was out at the Elite 11. I saw him at the Elite 11. I've seen him throw, you know, every 6 months in some type of setting. And it was a super impressive performance. You know, he rallied his team, got it to overtime. They lost. And he was a one-man show. Like, you know, they were throwing, he was throwing to a David Lake at wide receiver. like you keep
cross
saying.
Cross-country.
Like a little cross-country guy out there. And I think he's kind of got that intangible it in terms of being a leader. I love the frame. You know, he's run the ball. He was excellent the following, I think it was a week or week after that, against a good Lake Gibson team. So, you know, Miami's got to keep him committed. Who knows what happens if Rhett Lashley's somewhere else. But
right. They're going to have to fight. I think they're going to have to fight to keep him.
Yeah, well, it'll be interesting. We haven't gotten to the point where there's that shuffling of quarterbacks. There has been a few decommitments. You know, Ole Miss is actively fishing for a guy. Zach Pyron was committed to Baylor.
To me, though, he's a guy a lot of programs would take a chance on as a second quarter, like big-time programs. You know what I'm saying? So it'll be interesting. I think Miami needs to keep him. Like, you know, we talk about the importance of stacking quarterbacks. I think he's of that caliber where it's like, you got to get him in your program and develop him.
Let me ask you this. Like, do you think what you've seen, I know you watched that Walton game, you watched.
He's getting better.
Yeah. I mean, but do you think he's a guy who within 2 years is going to be in competing for Tyler Van, with Tyler Van Dyke and Jake Garcia? Like,
I view him as a year three guy. Okay. I think you can sprinkle him in year two, you know. If you want to get that running quarterback look, I think that's how you work him in year two. But I think year three is when you expect him to be ready to start. And I think, honestly, he would tell you that too. I think he knows he has work to do.
Can I have one last thought on Jakari? Like, just kind of talking with some guys about quarterbacks in this 22, where are we at 22? Yeah, this 22 class, like, you know, me and Cooper Batanga, who's a new analyst, like, we kind of both agree, like, to us, Drew Aller, who is committed to Penn State, is the most intriguing of the bunch. And that's because he's got like this frame and this persona to him. And if you go down the quarterback rankings, you know, it's a wide, like, the next one you kind of come across where it's like, damn, this guy's got a frame. Like, this is like an NFL type frame. It's
an it factor.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, I'm not saying, hey, he's going to be a four-star or anything like that, but that's something to think about. Like, yes, maybe there's some quarterbacks in front of him. Maybe those guys are game managers with a limited, you know, limited ceiling. But I think Jakari, he's a low floor, really high ceiling type of prospect. But I think he's what they need in terms of has it. I saw that, like, kind of grit and leadership in him. You know, he was all smiles. He was trying to get his team going.
I think you would agree, too. His self-awareness is unique. I think for a high school quarterback, like, he knows he has a lot of work to do. Right. I don't think that's very common.
Right. Well, I mean, Miami had a quarterback here that is, you know, lost the starting job. I
wonder who this will be about. Go ahead.
At USF to a true freshman who is one of the worst, not one of the worst passers I've seen, but he is not a talented passer. So yes, I think it's a 180 from what we've seen before in that quarterback room.
All right, so we'll close the book here on recruiting. We will talk about what everyone wants to hear us talk about now and kind of just the head coaching position at Miami and our thoughts on, you know, what works at Miami, what does not work at Miami, what they might need to do moving forward. So we'll take this break and jump into that discussion.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
All right, we are back. You know, again, I think it's important to say on the front end, as you alluded to, Andrew, earlier in the show, Miami still has a lot to play for. This staff certainly deserves a chance to get it turned around. But it has to show pretty quickly here with Miami facing Virginia on a Thursday night matchup, Coastal Division, foe, ACC schedule. All that good stuff. And right now it's not good vibes, right? So,
I mean, think about it like this, you know, I haven't seen this tweeted out. I don't even people realize it. Like, Miami has lost four straight to Power Five teams and none of those games have been close.
They're 1-4 in their last five, right?
Yeah.
And the App State win. Well, look, I do think it's a gritty win and all that. They still did not play well. That's the bottom line. They found a way to win, but it's not like they played well in that game. So,
but, no, you also got to point out, like, I keep seeing this on Twitter. It's been retweeted a ton. Miami has like what, like the second or third easiest remaining schedule according to Pro Football Focus?
Yes, I've seen that as well. My counter to that would be, is Miami very good?
I don't know.
So, you know, I agree. Like, again, though, on paper, Miami was better than Michigan State. So, I mean, we'll see how this all goes, right? We can talk ourselves into it, like we could talk ourselves into things, but here's where we're at right now today. Manny Diaz has to coach his way out of a hole, right? So let's just start here, Andrew. I mean, you're well-versed in the Manny Diaz era because you covered the team with me for a long time. In your opinion, I mean, there's a lot of ways to go here, but if you wanted to highlight one thing where Manny Diaz has gone wrong, what would you highlight?
Well, I said it multiple times in the front end of this podcast, in the first segment, player development, like, where is it? Like, we are year three.
Right.
And you know, what is puzzling, not puzzling or disturbing, is like Cam Kitchens or James Williams might start next to at safety
Bubba.
This week?
Bubba.
Next to Bubba. Okay. And yeah, like you want to play your young guys, but
it's not good. It's not healthy.
Right. And there's been the Devontae Williams situation. There's been injuries, but like, where is Keyshawn Washington? Where is Brian Balaam? And I think Balaam's dealing with an injury. I could be wrong here.
He is. Neck injury.
But like the bottom line is like good teams have like depth in like
correct
guys that have been developed. I think no one's getting better. Like, where's Marcus Clark? Where's Isaiah Dunson? And then
I think to your point, why is even Gervin Hall and Bubba Bolden regressing? They right appear to be regressing. Yeah. They're not even stagnant with their development. They appear to be getting worse. So I agree. I think this is a fair point.
And then you bring it up to linebacker. I didn't notice when Avery Huff got into the game, or I didn't even see it.
You weren't alone on that.
Yeah, exactly. But where's Tyreek Austin-Cave? Is he dealing with an injury as well?
Not that we know of. I think he's buried. So I don't know.
Right.
I know. I don't know. I mean, eventually you can't throw your hands up in the air and say, we keep missing, like these guys just aren't very good, right? Eventually you have to look yourself in the mirror and say, are we getting enough out of these guys?
Again, like I get it. There are injuries. There's been different setbacks, but man, this is supposed to be your defense. These are supposed to be your guys.
They are his defense and his guys.
When you miss your blue chippers, you're like, hey, what? We're going to go get Keyshawn Washington. That's the guy I want to take. Hey, Tyreek Austin-Cave is a kid. We're going to go up to New Jersey and we're going to invest all this time in recruiting him. And he's not even seeing the field right now.
Right. Who, you know, look, I don't think we're sitting here saying Tyreek Austin-Cave is a stud, right? But there was something there, right? There was something there, and we're not seeing any of it when the team could use something at that position, right?
Yeah. I recall specifically last year how much they talked up those young linebackers. Stagnant's a good word. I don't see it. And I think it's more on the defensive side of the ball. Like, this is supposed to be Manny's defense. You know, you ran Blake Baker out of here. You know, LSU's having their own season, but Ephraim Bonda left. You know, don't look now. Utah State 3-0. I've watched a few of their games. I don't know, man. It's puzzling to me where these guys are, where the chunk of your roster it should be. I mean, you're as good as your number twos. And Miami's number twos, and it's been the same thing for the past 3 years, aren't good right now.
Yeah. So interestingly, like, both sides of the ball are bad, but this development thing that you're speaking to and just the depth and the potential answer finding, like, again, offense and defense have been bad this year. I feel much better about the offense figuring it out right now, moving forward, than I do the defense for these reasons you're highlighting. And look, I think, again, your point of saying James Williams and Cam Kitchens, we shouldn't be seeing them. We're not saying like where things are at right now that we don't want to see them. We need to see them at this point. But right. But the follow-up to that is, why do we have to see them? It shouldn't be the case where, you know, we're depending so heavily on true freshmen across the roster.
That didn't enroll early either. Like, these are mid-year guys that, like, got here in.
Well, James, right. James came in the summer.
Yeah.
But Cam Kitchens.
Oh, Cam, I guess, yeah, he was around.
So, you know, it's not a good look, regardless. And also, too, Manny, and look, he's trying to play the young guy card right now when it's easy to do. You're playing Central Connecticut State. Like, they're going to play anyways. And he's so reactive. That's my problem, too. Like, he doesn't see it coming. There's no anticipation of, wow, Gervin Hall and Bubba Bolden look terrible in practice. Maybe we need to start playing James Williams and Cam Kitchens more. He waits till they look awful through three games and then decides, oh, we got to try and find some answers in freshmen. So, yeah, these are some of my concerns to go along with your point, Andrew.
And then I was looking this up, and this kind of circles back to where the development thing. Past three drafts, man, or you know, the past 3 years, Miami has turned three stars into draft picks. That'd be Greg Russo, Michael Jackson, and Sheldrick Redwine. Like, that's just not a good enough hit rate for me. Like,
right.
You know, Miami, to me, will always be able to compete for some blue chip guys, but they're not going to go out and sign 25 of them.
Sure.
All right. They're not going to sign, you know, they're going to sign five, six, seven of them, seven elite guys. They should always have that ability just based on location. But after that, you know, you've got to be good from the fifth player into your class to the 15th player. You know, that's where you got to get your depth guys. You're all.
So is that evaluation or is that development?
I think it's both. I think it's both, you know, and I you know, we can go through some examples right now if you want. And I'm
give
not
me
saying,
one.
Okay. In 2018, Elijah Moore wasn't good enough for Miami.
Right.
Okay. 2018, Jamie and Sherwood was not good enough for Miami. 2018, Tutu Atwell was not good enough for Miami. 2018, Rashad Wildgoose was not good enough for Miami. All those guys were just drafted in the NFL draft.
Right.
Okay. Did we know they're all going to be that? No. But man, someone in your recruiting department should identify it and want to roll the dice.
Right.
And we don't even have to use the NFL examples. Tyler Steen, offensive lineman out of St. Thomas Aquinas in that 2018 cycle. He ended up at Vanderbilt, started 24 straight games in the offensive line. I don't even remember Miami looking at him. Daniel Barker, tight end from Deerfield Beach, caught two touchdown passes over the weekend for Illinois. You know,
yeah. There's good players all over the place, to your point.
Right. I just, you know, we can just get into it.
Tell me this, because I think an interesting point, and I kind of see this thrown out there, and honestly, I think it's true. If you think about it, right, Manny's three best defenses, in my opinion, since he's been at Miami, 16, 17, 18, right?
Yeah.
Were those his players?
No.
That's not a good sign, right? I mean, that's not.
Well, look at his defense last year. Who were his good players? Jalen Phillips and Quincy Roche. Were those his guys?
No. Right. Right. So, you know, it's there are some concerns here. Let me go on my rant. And I wonder if you would push back on anything of this, Andrew. In my opinion, like, it's hard for me to bang on Manny too much, honestly, because I look at it even bigger picture than Manny. It's not Manny's fault that he was hired to be the head coach at the University of Miami, right? He's learning on the job. And this is the Andrew Ivins era of covering Miami. So you remember all these missteps and all, you know, I will say this, Manny does make moves to address his missteps, right?
Correct.
Year one, the program lacked accountability and the offense was horrible, right? So what did he do? He fired Dan Enos, made other changes to the offensive staff. He stopped tweeting TNM constantly and being brash on Twitter. He booted Jaren Williams, who I will never forget this when it comes to the Manny Diaz era. Jaren skipped a practice, just straight up skipped it, because he wasn't going to start. He still traveled with the team that week. The team fell behind, and Manny Diaz put him in the game, and he ended up winning the game. What does that do to your culture? Like, it is – anyway, so that was year one, beyond the whole FIU, Louisiana Tech, Duke losses, right? Fine. Year one pass. He makes changes. Rhett Lashley, new quarterback, De'Aaron King, who helps set the tone for a new culture. I think Manny would tell you Ed Reed being around the program might help the culture too. He also improved the specialists, right? Kicker was a problem, got Jose Borregales. So he did address issues on offense, but then the defense slips, right? I think too, in year two, I think we would all agree that the recruiting improved, you know, whether it's due to COVID, whatever it is, it's a bottom line business. He ended up getting Leonard Taylor, James Williams, Jake Garcia, along with other pretty good four-star players, I think. I think that's fair to say. Now we're here in year three. Manny Diaz has named himself defensive coordinator, which to me, I mean, I was here for it. If you feel like you can't find a better defensive coordinator than yourself, cool. But man, that's a risky move because he's now got no more bullets in the chamber to fire. And it takes, again, he is a coach learning on the job. This takes him away from that CEO approach of, hey, I can see issues all over my team. Let's address them. He's so dialed into the defense now, he might be missing some things. I do feel like too, you know, after recruiting really well last year, they've sort of rested on their laurels a little bit in recruiting. So that's kind of slipped a little bit, in my opinion, which was disappointing.
Yeah, dude, kids can take visits now.
Right. It should have been ramped up even more this year, right? So, and another thing I want to bring up too, I'm just not like, and look, Manny deserves credit for quickly addressing these things during off seasons, because we've seen head coaches at Miami that do not do that. Al Golden was stubborn. Mark Richt was stubborn. They wouldn't make these changes. So Manny Diaz deserves credit for that. To me, an issue with Manny in all three of these seasons is addressing issues that pop up during the season. You know, 2019, that offense was bad and it only got worse as the season progressed. Last year, the defense was average and it only got worse as the season progressed. Now the offense and the defense are bad. And I just don't know, like, how are you going to find answers? And it seems like his only answers right now are, hey, we're going to play the freshman. We're going to make the fan base happy and play the freshman. So these are my concerns. I don't know if you, either one of you guys would agree, disagree, push back on any of this.
Well, I'm gonna,
but
I'm gonna
learning let... on the job, this isn't a learning on the, it's a very hard job, Miami's head coaching job. And they need to stop hiring these guys that haven't done it at the Power Five level.
Well, I'll let Gabby speak. I will say, it's a good point. I didn't even think about that, but in terms of him being so dialed into the defense, it slipped everywhere else. I mean, there's only a certain amount of hours in the day.
Right.
You know, yeah, that's a good point. Second thing is everything you just said. I mean, if you really wanted to craft it, like that's kind of Dabo, his first few years at Clemson.
Sure.
And I'm not saying give Manny the leash or anything like that, but I think that's another example of someone that learned on the job, came in, was never a head coach, was essentially promoted and kind of figured it out. So I was thinking that as you were bringing that up.
I think, and look, he's got time. But I'm not sure on this, but in year three, did Dabo figure it out? I don't know what his year three record was, but I'll let you look it up. Gabby, what do you think?
I don't know. I mean, just like on the I feel like Dabo's almost like the exception, like not the rule there. Like, it's just like, I don't know. I just feel like at this point, you look around the country and you see other coaches that figured it out. Like, you know, you see look what Sam Pittman's doing in year two. Like, look what Mel Tucker did in year two. Like, I feel like there's... Like, I feel like Manny talks about culture a lot, but like, I don't know. I feel like you can't really fake it, you know? Like, I feel like what you mentioned, David, like Jaren Williams skipping a practice and then coming back, like traveling with the team. It's just like, you know, I feel like in culture programs, that doesn't happen. Like, you're not getting away with that. Like, we saw what happened in the opener against Alabama. Like, Jaleel Billingsley wasn't practicing as hard as maybe Nick Saban would wanted to. And he kept him on the sideline and had another tight end scoring a touchdown. Like, you know, I just feel like there's something lacking there, and you can't fake it. You can like talk about culture, but like there's a way to do it and there's a way not to. And I just feel like, I don't know. I do feel like there's a disconnect there between like, you know, what Manny's doing and like you see it in the results. Like, I feel
there's
like
there's no results. Yeah.
Yeah. There's no results. Like, you see these guys that really go in there and that are actually making an impact, and like, you see the results, maybe not in year one. Mel Tucker won two games last year, But, you know, he sort of flipped the roster around to the way that he wanted it, built it really with people he chose to bring in. And, like, they're 3-0 this year. He just went on the road and beat Miami by 21 points. This is year three for Manny. And it's just like, you're not seeing, like, where's the signature win? Like, all you see is a bunch of just bad losses. And then, like, even with the recruiting classes, you're not seeing the turnaround that, you know, you're seeing at some of these other programs that are able to figure it out in potentially tougher situations, just in terms of the ability to acquire talent and all that stuff.
Like, way tougher.
Like, how, like, Sam Pittman's recruiting in the SEC against all these other schools, and, you know, you're able to figure it out real quick. Like, you know, he's doing a really good job there. Like, you know, I'm going to be really interested to see how they look against Texas A&M this weekend. Like, I feel like we're going with Manny Diaz now in year three. Like, I'm terrified to play Virginia. Like, I'm worried about what Brennan Armstrong's going to do to Miami. And it's just like, why are we having these conversations in year three? Like, I feel like there's a disconnect between the words that he's saying and, like, what's actually happening, like, within the building. And I don't know. That's just how I feel. I feel like there's just some deeper rooted issues just within everything.
Andrew, you got the Dabo number?
So I didn't realize this. I mean, I'm not versed in my Dabo history.
Neither am I.
He took over in 2008 midseason for Tommy Bowden, not Terry Bowden, excuse me. First year 9-5, second season 6-7, third year 10-4.
Okay.
So it depends on when you want to count first year, but there was an initial step back.
Right. Absolutely.
So
let's go on to profile of a coach Miami needs, right? And again, Manny Diaz can figure it out if he figures it out.
Here.
Cool. Give me just what traits. We don't even need specific names. If you want to do specific names, I'm here for it. But, like, what – I'll let you go first, Andrew. What's the number one thing you want and you would want in a head coach at Miami? Because you're familiar with the program. You know what the job is.
So this we could talk for an hour about this. I think Miami is at a crossroads. And this isn't a program thing. This is a university thing. They need to decide, do we want to be a perennial college football playoff contender, a team that's ranked in the top 10 every year coming into the preseason? If that's what you want to do, then you back up the Brinks truck, you get as much funding,
figure it out,
and you go and get Mario Cristobal, right? That's option one.
Let me stop you there. Do you have any, like, do you have any doubt that he would succeed at Miami?
Oh, I think he would. I mean, I remember 6-7 years ago, he was
What would be the biggest drawback to Mario at Miami? Because honestly, I can't think of one. Like, you know, with each coach, there's always kind of something. But, like, in terms of how they fit at Miami.
Oh, dude. Well, his right-hand man. I mean, no one even brings this up. Alex Mirabal is like an O-line guru. That's like his right-hand man. Like, he would come – that would come and fix your problems right away.
Along
right
with there. Him. He is
Exactly. So, no, I've seen him recruit. I saw him recruit. What I was saying before, sorry, I got some text message. Like, I remember 5-6 years ago, I was at St. Thomas Aquinas. He whipped it in some Alabama, you know, SUV, and bam, he's there getting whoever he wants. So, yeah, I think he would be – I don't see any drawbacks with him.
What I'm saying is – because I think there's this whole Miami doesn't have the money thing, which I think they can find the money if they want, you know. And again, we're not at this point where they need to go find the money because Manny Diaz isn't fired yet. Or, you know, he's still the head coach, I should say. But look, man, I think Miami needs to understand they're in this buyout hell because they keep hiring the guy who isn't going to work. They're essentially gambling rather than investing. Right. They got to think of it like Amazon stock. Right. Like, yeah, Amazon stock's expensive. You know, in 2011, it was $200. In 2016, it was $800 a share. Today, it's $3,400 a share. So you got to pay that money up front. But on the back end, he's going to make the money for you as a program. And you're not going to be in buyout hell anymore. I would argue, too, Mark Richt in 2016 and 2017. Generated a ton of revenue for the program compared to what they were getting from the end of the Al Golden era.
Yeah. this is big picture with college football right now. Like what you, when you're saying buyout hell or whatever, that's just where we're at right now. I mean, think about any team in the country.
FSU.
Any team that is in the country right now that is off to a disappointing start wants to fire their coach, right? And this is how it works. So, and then once there is an opening, every coach is linked to that opening. And there's not a ton of good candidates out here, right? So James Franklin, he's linked to this USC thing. It doesn't even matter if he actually wants to interview. He's going to get a contract extension. He's going to get more money. Right.
Right.
And then USC has to go to their next candidate. And then either that guy says yes or no, he's going to get more money or not. And I just think you're right. At some point, you just got to be like, hey, if we want a good coach, we got to buy in now.
And let me ask you this. OK. I think a lot of people, too, bring up, why would Mario leave Oregon? Because Oregon, a lot of people and even people inside the UM building, which blows my mind, feel like Oregon is a better program or a better situation than Miami. And it's like, since when did Oregon become this destination job? Yeah. And look, it's a good job. They have a sugar daddy. Absolutely. No doubt. But this is college football, man. The coach makes the program. Chip Kelly was a stud, right? Mm-hmm. How were they under Mark Helfrich?
Oh, I thought you were going to go Willie Taggart here.
I was about to say, the hire before Mario Cristobal is Willie Taggart. Like, it's not like it was like this massive.
And was it a destination job for Willie?
I mean, obviously not. He bounced after 1 year, you know? Like, I don't know. I
think Mario's made it a good job. University of Florida, when they have crap coaches, how are they? When Will Muschamp's the coach, when Jim McElwain's the coach, Florida State, Willie Taggart and Mike Norvell, how's it going there? It's all about the coach. So either you're going to pay up for the coach or you're not. Last thing too on this rant, and we'll move on. The Athletic, right, put out a list of top 12 coaches, or sorry, top 12 jobs in the country. They had 100 people, ADs, coaches, writers, people all around college football vote. The University of Miami wasn't in the top 12, but they were number 13 in that ranking. They were ahead of Oregon, who was number 14. They also ranked ahead of Florida State, Penn State, and North Carolina. So it is a job that has a lot of pluses. Now, is it a perfect job? Absolutely not. But it has its strengths that, like, if you get the right coach that understands how to exploit those strengths, I still think it can be a power, but you have to go get the coach.
Yeah. I mean, I don't, like, I hear people discuss this all the time. Like, well, you could go to Miami, you can recruit and you can come back and sleep in your own bed. And the more I think about that, like, I do think that's a very attractive option
for Mario. Absolutely. Like, right. He would destroy it at Miami.
Absolutely. He has family here, man. Like, his whole family's here.
Yeah.
Let me highlight just who he got at Alabama. Alex Leatherwood, Calvin Ridley, Jerry Jeudy, Minkah Fitzpatrick, Quinnen Williams. That's while he was at Alabama. Oregon, the recruiting classes have gone up every year. T.Y. Hilton, he got at FIU. I remember I covered Miami recruiting back then. I'm that old. Miami made a late push for T.Y. Hilton.
Was Twitter around at this time or no?
It was in its infancy, man. There was like four people on it, like Ashton Kutcher. So Miami made a run at flipping T.Y. Hilton. They couldn't do it because Mario said, nah, you're coming to FIU. So anyways, yeah, obviously Mario Cristobal, to me, I think everyone here would agree, is the perfect fit. And honestly, too, the frustrating thing for Miami, they're never going to have this option again of like a desirable coach who's ascending where the interest could be mutual, right? Like, there's a lot of good coaches out there, but not every coach wants to come to Miami.
Right.
That potential is there with Mario Cristobal. So we have a lot of higher ups that listen to this podcast. Hopefully they heard all this ranting anyways. So, okay. Other names or other traits. Who do you got?
Okay, so I mentioned the fork in the road, right? So that was option one. Option two, Miami was like, all right, we don't want to pay this. I think the next category, right?
It's not. I'm already not liking this.
Yeah, I mean, there's gonna be a ton of inside the U subscribers gonna be like, F no, I hate that strategy. But this is my take. This is what Miami would need to do.
Let's hear it.
You just got to embrace being a developmental program. Okay. And what do I mean by that? Think Stanford 5, 6, 7 years ago. Stanford, who every year won 9 games, right? And then maybe it was every other year when they had the right players, the stars aligned, you push for that 10th, 11th win in a spot in a BCS game or the college football playoff is what it would be now, right? So you embrace that role, all right? I don't think there's a ton of differences between Miami and Stanford in terms of academics.
Sure.
It's a high academic school. So I think you could start playing that up. But it would come down to player development. You would have to recruit the right guys. The guys in your class, I'm going to keep saying it, from 5 to 15 would be guys that make it to the NFL.
Okay.
And I still think that allows you to go out and get some of these blue chip guys. Like, you can still recruit a Leonard Taylor. You can still recruit a James Williams, right? Sure. But now I'm under the impression, hey, I'm more concerned about getting the guy that fits my program from the jump. So I think that would be the next route. And who are some coaches that could do that?
Let's hear it.
You know, I think it has to be a head coach. Miami has to hire
a guy. No more assistants. 100%.
Like, you know, so
I think a Power 5 head coach.
Power 5, yes.
Yes. Or a retread, maybe, someone that's done it before.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, the name that jumps out to me that probably kind of lean a little bit towards the splashier side, PJ Fleck. You know, I think he would bring some energy, some juice. I think he would attack this recruiting area, but more importantly, he develops players, man. I looked it up. You know, he's had 10 guys from his time at Western Michigan drafted. You know, none of those guys were 4-star guys. And while he's moved on, you know, he's done some things. I think you would have a good staff. I think you would have a staff that kind of understands what you need.
I'm a Fleck believer with you. I think people would push back and say he's gone 15-20 in the Big Ten. What would you say to that?
Well, Big Ten's a lot harder than the ACC right now.
Sure.
That's what I would say. I don't think Minnesota's an easy job.
Right.
No.
And I think you give them the access to the players you can get at Miami. I think it's going to be a little bit different. I mean, dude, do you remember 2 cycles ago when Miami tried to flip James Gordon, a linebacker from Minnesota, and he was like, no.
Right.
He's like PJ Fleck says I couldn't visit.
I'm with you. I think Fleck would be a good fit.
On the other hand, and this isn't a knock on Miami, but Manny Diaz can't even get the son of a legacy recruit to take an official visit to Miami, but the kid's going to go visit Florida State this weekend
on
an official visit. I just think it's, you know, someone has a backbone, someone doesn't.
Right.
You know? Yeah. And as harsh as that sounds, I'm just kind of, you know, laying it out there. So that's really the candidate I have. I mean, I just think the category would be like, I you know, Dave Clawson's name gets thrown around a ton for all these jobs. Like,
recruiting, though. Recruiting would be the concern there, don't you think?
Right. I mean, he's a developmental guy.
Right.
Like, I think you just need some guy that has a track record of developing guys. Like, what about Pat Narduzzi? Like, someone like that.
I think recruiting, too, would be tough.
Yeah, but he recruits. I'm just saying, someone that is taking what he gets access to. And turning it into gold.
I like that. It's just the willingness to a little bit play the game in South Florida. I'm not sure Pat Narduzzi is willing to do that.
Yeah,
he does try to recruit South Florida guys a lot, though. I feel like a lot of these kids have gone on trips to Pitt. Like, I feel like they've done a decent job getting like South Florida guys up there.
Okay, this is the one that you threw out, Tom Allen.
Yeah, I'm intrigued. I don't know much about him, but it's, you know, he recruits Florida very well. You know, he's from the state of Florida, so he understands the state. Would the fan base be all in on that? Probably not. And no, I get it, right?
I don't think this category the fan base is going to go for.
Right, Gabby. Yeah. What name would you throw out there?
I mean, I'm Mark Stoops. I mean,
sure, Coach. I think he would fit that category, don't you, Andrew?
Who, Mark Stoops?
Yeah.
No, I think he fits in that category as well. But Mark Stoops right now has the best job in America.
Sure.
You know his contract, right? At Kentucky?
Yes.
Oh, I don't.
Oh, if he wins 8 games, he gets another year extended on his contract.
I don't think it's even 8. I think it's like 6 or 7.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay. I didn't know that.
Yeah. I mean, but
if he wants to take the next step, and Mark Stoops has coached at Miami.
He's coached at Miami before.
There's a connection.
I feel like
there.
He does a really good job. Like, I feel like Kentucky is producing offensive linemen like crazy right now. You know, he's produced NFL draft picks. You know, he got Josh Allen there. You got a few other guys that you know, have come through there. I don't know. I feel like Mark Stoops isn't a bad option. I didn't know anything about that contract situation. But, I mean, I feel like he's someone that has a South Florida connection in a way. He's seen Miami be great, you know, just during that time that he was here. And, you know, I do feel like he'd be a good recruiter and developer. You know, like, I feel like he sort of fits the bill there, too.
I like Greg Schiano. What do you think of that?
I mean, dude, row the boat, or not row the boat, rah-rah, Rutgers, man, they're 3-0 right now.
It's impressive. He's doing it twice.
And that's a really hard job.
Right. So, and I believe I have
really well.
I believe I have this right. He was in the mix when they hired Mark Richt. I think he was a name being tossed around, and then Mark Richt became available, and they went all in on Mark Richt. But I think Greg Schiano, again, I don't know if he would excite the fan base, but to me, he embodies everything kind of Miami needs, you know, like a Mario Cristobal light almost, you know. So, yeah, those are some good names. And I think you bring up a good point with the development, Andrew. It is an area that's plagued Miami for quite some time, honestly.
And I'll say this with Schiano, with Stoops, some of these other names that have been thrown out there.
Lane Train. Who said that?
I mean, he'd be fun. He could take his boat to work.
Jake Garcia. Yeah. What would he do with Jake Garcia? Oh. Anyways, I distracted you. Sorry.
Like, the more I've been in this field and realized it and seen it, like, good assistant coaches want to work for good head coaches.
Absolutely.
Right? Yeah. And good assistant coaches are the coaches that produce and develop players, right?
Yep.
They're the ones that also know that, hey, my room's future hinges on me recruiting. And I always circle back to parts of Mark Richt's staff. There were some very good pieces there. Good guys want to work for him.
I think it's been the best staff at Miami in a while. Those yes. Mark Richt staffs.
Yes. I mean, think about it like this. This is not a knock on
right.
I mean, right now, but who on Miami's staff right now, aside from a handful of guys, T-Rob, Likens, has taken a guy they recruited, right, and got them to the NFL?
Sure. They're all young, quote-unquote, ascending coaches, right? So I think that's a fair point.
Okay, then maybe you need to go and get guys that aren't ascending coaches.
Correct.
And guys that can figure this thing out. So
correct.
That would just be my thing. That's why I think you have to get a guy that has experience, a guy that has been at the Power 5 level, a guy that's kind of, you know, people are going to
you know this.
For.
Mario's FIU staffs, right? Didn't they have like his OC was like Scott Satterfield his DC was like Jeff Collins. Do I have that right?
Yeah, I believe it's something like that.
At FIU. So he does have, again, speaking to your point with the Mario Cristobal prism through that lens, he has also identified assistants at a high level.
Dave, let me ask you, let's toss out this name because it's going to be a popular one, like Billy Napier. Like, what do you think about that?
My thing with Billy Napier is Group of Five. I'm not
so we're
not interested, unfortunately.
That,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah. And you know, the Barry Jackson article, you know, I think this was more just throwing names against a wall. I don't think it's necessarily like the names, but it listed Billy Napier, Marcus Freeman, who is an assistant.
Yeah,
not
that's
interested.
A no for me.
No.
And then who was the third? Oh, Luke Fickell. Good coach. I don't think he's a good fit for Miami.
No, I don't either.
Yeah, I can't see him walking into.
That would probably be my only reservation for PJ Fleck, too, that he's just like a Great Lakes guy.
I think Fleck has the swagger to come to South
I think
Florida.
He does, too. But
I don't think Fickell does.
I mean, that would be my only thing that I'd be like a little worried about.
Fickell, to me, like they talk about Fickell in USC, and they say, we're not sure he's an LA guy. Well, if he's not an LA guy, he's definitely not going to be a Miami guy.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Well, story time real quick on PJ Fleck, young Andrew Ivins. I was covering, Notre Dame. This might've been 2015. I don't know. They used to, when mega camps and satellite camps were hot, they do this thing up in the Midwest, best of the Midwest, over 4,000 kids on one field. You know, Jim Harbaugh's there, PJ Fleck's there. I'm standing right there talking to a Western Michigan staffer. So this is when PJ's at Western Michigan. Goes right up to the staffer. He goes, I don't know what the curse word you got to do, but to show me the 10 kids I need to shake hands with here in the next 10 minutes. and then he just walked away. So
yeah,
that has been a lasting image in my
head. No, yeah. He is.
I got that in my veins.
Some people think he's corny. I like him. So, you know, I get it, I guess, if you think he's corny, but I think he'd be
like corny to an extent, I feel like works. Like, I mean, I don't know.
It's like win, creating that excitement. Absolutely. Yeah. Dabo Swinney is corny.
Yeah.
Let's get out of here on this. And this doesn't have to be too long, but so let's say Miami does make a move. For that next coach, whoever it would be, Andrew, you're very familiar with the roster management and the talent on this roster right now. Is the cupboard bare for that next coach walking it? Like, obviously the depth will be a concern, blah, blah, blah. But is there something to work with? And not necessarily win 10 games right away, but it's not going to be an FSU disaster, correct?
Yeah, I mean, you guys are the ones out at practice. So I don't really know, you know, in terms of, I think there's definitely some talented pieces. It'll be interesting if there is a move that happens, because what, you know, I know Bud Elliott at 24/7 Sports has kind of detailed this whole thing, man. The transition classes in this new signing, early signing area are really, really hard.
You got to go portal.
You got to go portal. So then, yeah. You know, you would think if we're going that maybe developmental route, you would try to take some guys that have some years, some tread left on the tires instead of 1 year fixes. But no, I don't think it's completely bare.
Like quarterback's okay. That's a good start, right?
Yeah, running back's kind of a disaster. What happened there?
Well, we got suspensions and ACL injuries, unfortunately. Yeah.
Okay. I mean, it's just, I don't.
You got Leonard Taylor. I think everyone would agree, even though Miami's not playing him, he is a very intriguing talent. So hopefully he does not transfer.
Can I get in one? Like, what are we doing here? Like, Miami going and offering a junior college defensive lineman on Tuesday night. Like, do you not think there's some school around the country that is messaging Leonard Taylor, hey man, they're not even playing you, but hey, like, look, they're gonna try to recruit you right now. Like,
yeah, we live in an older guy.
We live in an era where you have to recruit your own roster, man. Is that sending the right message?
No words. No, Andrew, he's gonna play a lot this week. Don't worry.
Desmond Watson played against Alabama for Florida.
Who weighs 400 pounds.
I know.
Yeah.
Insane.
I know. No, but.
I'm saying, like, look, it's not, obviously, whoever that coach would be would have to do work with recruiting. And to me, that's the number one trait this new head coach would have to have.
Yes.
Dog recruiter. But I think Jake Garcia, there's something there. I think there's something there with the young receivers. Again, even though they don't play them, Elijah Arroyo is a very good tight end. You know, there's stuff there.
Chance Williams looks to be something, right?
There's something there. Yeah. So, and you got to find a way to keep these young, these cornerback commits in the class. So there is definitely holes in this roster. Absolutely. But I don't think, like we're seeing right now with FSU, like the roster has just been so atrocious that it's been hard for not only Willie Taggart, but also Mike Norvell to get this thing off the ground. Whether or not they're good coaches is another discussion, but the roster is just a mess.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. Once you get so far behind in the eight ball, it's really hard to claw your way out.
Right.
You know, cause you're not going to have the access to the top guys in the portal. Everyone wants the guys in the portal, and then it just snowballs, man. And you're right. That's what I think the issue right now with Florida State is. Let me ask you this, David. I know we're now in some tangent, but did Miami not make a mistake like going after Jermaine Johnson? Like,
yes, that
should have been the guy they went after, right?
Absolutely. If I remember it correctly, they just were a little too quote unquote patient. Like, it seemed like Florida State got on him. You're our guy, 1,000,000%, before even Miami made a real move on him. And then like 2 days later, he announces, oh, I'm going to Florida State. Yeah. And so, yes, that was disappointing. And absolutely, he would be changing this defense in some way, right? Like his defensive
end. He'd be playing over Zach McLeod for sure.
Right. The defensive line isn't maybe the issue, but it's definitely not as good in terms of edge rushing as we've seen here in recent years. So anything else we need to get off our chest?
Well, I mean, I'll say this. Look, like, not to be the optimist, but you know, Miami, the bulk of the schedule is ahead of them. We'll see. I don't have much faith in what's going on, and
it doesn't look good. But certainly,
I'm going to be watching 12 hours of football on Saturday. Like, I guess I'm. Is this game on the ACC network?
Nah, man, it's on like Bally Sports locally.
Bally Sports, yeah.
What's wrong with that? It's a home of the Florida Panthers, boys. That's
there you go.
Yeah, I'm gonna tune in because I want to know. Is like Van Dyke the guy or is Jake Garcia the guy? Because I'm in team Van Dyke DVD. So
you are.
Yeah.
Get out of here.
I know.
I mean, they're both very good. So let's wrap it up on that. Thank you, Andrew, for joining us, making another appearance on the pod. You weren't too rusty. You held your own.
Held my own. I probably talked too much. I'm sorry, Gabby.
No, you're good, bro.
Gabby doesn't mind.
I definitely don't.
we have to do too many of these podcasts now. So let's wrap it up there. Again, Miami takes on Central Connecticut, 12:30 kick, Bally Sports. We will see a lot of young players. Hopefully, we will see a lot of young players make plays. So till next time, guys, thanks for listening and take care.
Streaming on Paramount Plus.
You ready, Bob?
Well, all right.
Audiences are raving. Bob Marley is electrifying. It's the feel-good movie of the year.
You dig?
Bob Marley, One Love. Rated PG-13. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.